Now this one is your absolute favorite Star Trek, if I remember right.
Not just Star Trek, favorite, one of my favorite all-time science fiction series. So not just of Star Trek, but I love Deep Space Nine. I'm holding the mic normal.
I know. I'm sorry. I can't afford a new one right now. Give me time.
I'm not giving you crap over it.
I'm apologizing to the listeners as well. We will get there, but it's going to be a little bit.
Yeah, money's a little bit tight.
Yes.
Which, speaking of tight, you can always go to adamandeve.com and, you know, work out your tightness as it is. You know, if you use the promo code STATIC, you get, what's the deal?
You get 50% off one item.
And there's more.
You get within the U.S., including Alaska and Hawaii, you get free shipping.
And?
3 free DVDs, and that's plenty.
And? No.
Wait, there's more. a free mystery gift that is just so dirty we can't even talk about it here.
And they don't tell us what it is, it's randomized, so exactly. We don't actually know what your free mystery gift would be.
But you get a free mystery gift, three, that is really hard to say. Three free adult DVDs.
The double E and the double E are kind of hard to say there.
Exactly. And then of course, half off one of your items. And a huge selection.
And, I mean, we had a fan email us that he used our special code STATIC, and he got a Brie Olson pocket anus. And he was really proud of that.
He was proud. He was worried that he'd lose his fiance over
his
it.
His betrothed, is the way he put it. But hey, if you got a pocket anus, what else you got to worry about, right?
Exactly.
And Brie Olson, too. So adamandeve.com, promo code STATIC. Okay, now let's actually talk Star Trek.
Okay.
All right, now you said you never really liked Deep Space Nine. And keep in mind, for those who may have missed the last couple of weeks, Scott was not a classic Trekker, but was a big Next Generationer.
And to be honest, I'm not really a Trekkie of anything. I enjoyed Next Generation. I certainly enjoyed it more than I enjoyed the original series.
Okay.
But I'm not a Trekker or Trekkie by any stretch of the imagination. And DS9, there was a switch that happened, especially a few seasons into DS9.
Oh, yeah. Once you get to season 4, everything changed.
Yeah.
Which I think was a positive change. People who were big Next Gen fans thought was a negative change.
Exactly. And that was that everything got really dark. Instead of having hope for the future or having this optimistic technology that's out there, it took this switch where technology became evil and all the evils of the world were being enhanced by technology. Now, given that was probably a reflection of the times.
And I also think it was time for Star Trek to do that. It really was. Because you had two shows that were relatively optimistic. Why not show the dark side? That think of the Federation and its size. There has to be a dark side. You know, it can't always be uplifting and negotiations. You're going to have psychopaths and serial killers and things of that nature. You're going to have these things. Let's actually show them and explore those.
See, but again.
And terrorists. Terrorism, so pre-9/11, that was a big deal on Deep Space Nine, was terrorism.
Very true. But again, in my fiction, if we're going to fictionalize things, why not fictionalize everything and leave me with a hopeful feeling instead of okay.
They're going to blow us
great.
Up.
More of the same. That's just what I want to hear.
Well, I think actually people that would watch DS9 now in a post-9/11 world would actually read more into it than they did back in the 90s. Because for one thing, one of your main characters is a sympathetic terrorist that killed innocent civilians.
Yep.
And that would be Major Kira.
Yep.
And it brings up that whole, was she a terrorist? Was she a freedom fighter? Thing, because she was fighting for the freedom of her people and killing innocent people to do it. It really brings up that real gray line, and that's
exactly. It depends on which side you happen to fall on.
Right. Well, it's the difference between, you know, a freedom fighter and a terrorist as defined by the Bush administration. You know?
Yeah, the freedom fighters wave our flag.
Well, and to the people that they're killing, they're terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
To us, they're a freedom fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But that's political. Let's stay out of that for now.
Okay, well.
Well, and do you know who Major Kira almost was?
Who?
Ro Laren from Next Generation. That role was written for her.
Really?
Michelle Forbes thought she had a chance at a movie career, and she made a couple of bombs and a couple of direct-to-video films, and then she took a regular role in Homicide: Life on the Street. But that role was originally supposed to be Ro Laren. It was supposed to be Ro and Chief O'Brien coming over from Next Gen to bridge to DS9. And then the role was rewritten when Michelle Forbes dropped out.
See, Ensign Ro always annoyed me.
Well, and Ensign Ro also did something else that was big on Deep Space Nine.
What was that?
The Maquis. The Maquis claimed a lot of name characters. Thomas Riker, Will Riker's transporter clone, joined the Maquis. Eddington, the Starfleet chief of security on Deep Space Nine, joined the Maquis. Ro Laren joined the Maquis. Numerous captains from Star Trek and Next Generation joined the Maquis. Okay. And even Cassidy Yates, Sisko's wife, ended up joining the Maquis. Because the Maquis were a very sympathetic organization that Next Generation didn't deal with too often.
True.
You know, for the listeners, the Maquis were basically Federation citizens that for the last 10 to 15 years had colonized a certain area of space in the Federation. And all of a sudden, a contract or a treaty renegotiation gave all of their planets and their star systems to the Cardassians. And the Cardassians said, get the fuck out. And they said, no, this is our home. We will fight for our home. We're not leaving. And so they became criminals to both the Cardassians and the Federation.
Also played a, well, not quite as big of a role, but also played a role in Voyager.
Yeah, well, half the crew was, but Maquis, that's next week. We'll get to Voyager next week. But yeah, the Maquis were a very big thing in Star Trek. And Deep Space Nine also had, both insultingly and not, the best captain in Star Trek, I think. And that would be Captain Benjamin Sisko. Or in the first three seasons, Commander Benjamin Sisko, because God forbid they make the black guy a captain. I'm joking.
Played amazingly well by Avery Brooks.
Right. And if you remember how Avery Brooks looked in the later episodes as Sisko, he looked exactly like Hawk from Spencer for Hire. And basically he was playing Hawk in space. You know, with the bald head and the goatee and the fuck you attitude. He basically was playing Hawk in space.
Yeah, well, the Hawk plus a little bit of Morpheus plus...
Morpheus didn't exist yet.
He did in my mind.
That's the looking way it back,
is.
He does.
Looking back, he existed prior to his existence. That's the way it is.
Well,
okay. I've been watching too much Doctor Who lately. Okay.
Now, what actually turned you off of DS9 initially, or did you not watch it first run?
I didn't watch it first run, but excuse me.
He's yawning.
I find Josh boring. I can't help it. I didn't catch it first run. I did catch it out of order.
That's not going to help your understanding of it because unlike the other two Treks, this one was continuity based and the episodes all took place in a specific order and sometimes a whole season long story arc. So seeing them out of order, you are going to lose a lot of the impact.
And that's a lot of what lost me. Now I've gone back and I've watched a few in order and it is continuity based, but there's no real exploration. There's no new places until later in the series.
The Gamma Quadrant right off the bat when they find the wormhole in the pilot.
But
getting you to a whole other area of the galaxy that, you know, we weren't able to get to.
But the station doesn't go anywhere, and you have all of these characters that kind of remain the same. And
I'd say the characters remain the same. I will fight you on that. This is the only one where the characters are radically different. And they really do grow as the series progresses. And so I will fight you. The characters do not stay the same.
Plus it turned all dark and I didn't.
I know, but I liked it. To me, it was the mature Star Trek. And I mean that in a positive sense. Mature in a positive way. And to me, all the other Star Treks were that lighthearted adventure that, as we discussed before, I don't like, but you did. And I didn't mind that there was no exploration, which that was a complaint everybody had right off the bat with the show, was, oh, they don't go anywhere, there's no ship, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, fine, here you sit with the same characters, and you're dealing with the political aspect. You're dealing with arguably the realistic aspect of running this, of running a federation. You're dealing with the petty infighting. You're dealing with the people that are stuck on a space station that is not theirs. It's all alien technology. Nothing works. Because, I mean, a running theme for about the first three seasons was that O'Brien was constantly having to run around by the fact that we're trying to integrate Federation technology that's been retrofitted to work with Bajoran technology that does not work with Federation technology. And that nothing worked on the station for about the first three seasons.
I don't want to hear, I mean, in my sci-fi, I don't want to hear about the petty infighting. I don't want to hear about the politics. I don't want to hear about that kind of stuff. I want exploration. I want
fun,
strange new things and fun new adventures. And DS9, it was like, oh, joy. Quark is at his bar trying to run a scam, and Sisko runs in and stops him, and woo.
Well, then once you added the Dominion, you added another dark, dark aspect. And see, the Dominion also... Remember that writing trap we talked about last week where somebody would introduce a certain aspect or a certain piece of technology that would end up being used later in that episode to save the good guys?
Right.
DS9 avoided that. They introduced that stuff at the beginning of the season and then ended up using it later in the season. They introduced the Dominion slowly.
Whoops.
You just got blooped.
Yes, I did. From your wife.
What does she want?
I don't know. I don't care.
Okay. But, you know, they introduced the Dominion slowly, little references, little hints. You know, they'd be talking to new Gamma Quadrant races and they'd be mentioning this Dominion thing.
I shut down the program.
I know. There's nothing even popping up. I don't know where that bloop came from.
I am sorry, listeners, for the blooping, but you can blame his wife.
Yeah, you can blame my wife. But so the Dominion was slowly introduced and then they made a splash. Do you remember the first time we actually encountered the Dominion?
No.
Okay, the Odyssey was the Enterprise's sister ship, okay?
Okay.
The Enterprise D's, which probably was just an excuse to be able to reuse the model. In reality, that's probably the only reason they made it the sister ship.
But it's about time they had more than one galaxy class out there. But anyway.
So the Odyssey, which, by the way, was captained by Skeletor. Alan Oppenheimer was the captain, and he's the voice of Skeletor in the old He-Man cartoons.
Wait, it's a man named Alan?
Alan Oppenheimer.
I thought you said Ellen Oppenheimer, and I was really confused. Okay, Alan Oppenheimer.
Alan Oppenheimer. And the Odyssey was rescuing Sisko and O'Brien and a couple of other people, and they ran into the Jem'Hadar, who flew their ship into the Odyssey's deflector dish, cascading it into their warp nacelle and blowing them all up as they were retreating.
Yay.
Blowing up the Odyssey, killing all the women and children on board as well.
Yay.
And as O'Brien's like, why did they do that? We were retreating. They'd won. And Sisko is like, they did that to show us that they'll do anything to win, and we're in over our heads. And that was when we realized that the Dominion was going to be the big bad. That these guys were not the Klingons. These were not the Romulans. These were not even the Borg. That, you know, we were outclassed when we ran into the Dominion.
Okay.
And then that's when you saw the show take that darker turn that you didn't like. I mean, and keep in mind, we didn't even get into the war with them until the end of season 5. The official war had not been declared. Because prior to that, you got to remember, the Dominion made the Klingons pull out of the treaty, and we had a slight war with them until they realized they were in over their head and they rejoined the Alliance. And then the Romulans joined the Dominion, and the Cardassians joined the Dominion. And then eventually we never got the Cardassians back. But we ended up in what some people call the worst episode of Star Trek because it is so dark. And, you know, everyone gave this thing, Picard would never, ever, ever have sat for what Sisko did. And basically Sisko, Bashir, and Section 31 assassinated the Romulan premier and made it look like the Dominion did it to get them to switch sides. And you got to admit, that's some pretty dark shit.
That is. That is. And there is one telltale sign, by the way, at the beginning of a DS9 episode, on which episode you're watching. Light, we'll say light side or dark side.
You can tell when the tone changes. This is the only Star Trek show that changed the opening theme music halfway through their run. All of a sudden, you went from, remember the opening we started the show with?
Right. Go back and listen if you're curious. There was that one that was kind of bright.
It was kind of uplifting.
Hopeful, uplifting. Yeah.
And then they went to this. Can you tell the tone sort of changed? It got a little bit darker. It got a little bit harder.
We feature the Defiant.
Right, which the Defiant is probably the greatest ship in all of Star, one of the greatest sci-fi ships out there. The Defiant was basically a big gun with chairs and an engine.
It was the A-10 of Star Trek ships.
Well, because it was developed to shoot at the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
The ship was made to fire at the Borg. And they even had to ramp it down a little bit. When they first got the Defiant, O'Brien said, basically the ship almost shakes itself apart every time they fire. So we actually have to take some of the oomph out of the phasers on this thing. And it had a blade of armor. It had quantum torpedoes. The first time they did that, later the Enterprise would get those in First Contact. And then it had the coolest thing of all, a cloaking device.
And it had one thing that I appreciated that I had never seen on a Star Trek ship since the original series.
Which was?
Physical switches.
Oh, people going click, 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 yes. Click, click. Because I think they wanted to get away from that. Basically, the keyboard being a light-up screen.
Exactly.
Shit from.
Exactly. The old L cars that a lot of people have a lot of fond memories of, the interface. And but, yeah, it does make piloting a ship rather sterile. And so I do remember when they were building the Defiant, I forget what character it was that was talking about it, but he was like, no, I want real switches. Give me a control panel with switches.
Probably Dax, because remember, she was like 700 years old, or half of her was.
Okay, possibly. I don't remember, but...
Well, and then you also have... Again, going to the maturity of it, you have characters like Dr. Bashir, who radically changes as the series goes. He's this impudent little, oh, yay, 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 kind of doctor in the early episodes.
Yeah.
By the end, he's cynical and down. And you also have what I consider to be the greatest character in all of Star Trek, and that is Elam Garak, Cardassian Taylor / ex-spy / kind of go-to guy.
Kind of almost a... You don't really know whether he's an agent, double agent, or triple agent at times, so...
Right, and the thing that was beautiful about Garak was, literally, you never really knew where his character fell.
Right.
I mean, you never knew, no matter how much good he did for the Federation, and the only reason he went to the Federation is, basically, they're the only ones that would have him, because, Sisko didn't trust him, Sisko trusted that he would get the job done, you know? And you also got to remember... DS9 decided, unlike Next Generation, which was relatively episodic, DS9 was going to affect the entire Star Trek universe. You had the Romulan and Cardassians' disastrous attempt to have a preemptive war on the Dominion, which crippled both economies war chests. Then you had the Klingon thing, when the Klingons stopped being our allies. And we're not even getting into the Dominion War.
Right.
Which we do know the Enterprise was involved in. They mentioned it in dialogue of the Enterprise had an encounter with a Dominion ship and whatnot. So the Enterprise did fight the Dominion. It just happened off camera.
Ah.
So Picard and them did fuck with Dominion forces at various points.
Okay.
And you've even got, like, look at First Contact, the movie First Contact. The Defiant has a really small role in that when the Enterprise first makes it to Earth and is battling the Dominion. Do you notice the little, and I really like this little attention to detail that Jonathan Frakes did in that. You see Worf's crew on the Defiant before the Enterprise picks them up.
Okay.
You'll notice those same characters are the ones following Worf around for that whole movie, and they're wearing the DS9 uniforms rather than the Next Generation uniforms that the other crew members are wearing.
Okay.
I thought that was a nice little attention to detail that these are people, these are Sisko's people.
Nice touch.
That happen to be working for Picard in this certain instance. And I thought that was interesting. And I was glad at the end of season 3 they actually promoted Sisko and actually made him a captain instead of always making him a commander in the first 3 seasons. I don't think that was fair.
Okay.
I don't think that was fair. I mean, you've got Captain. Are you okay?
No, I'm not.
It's not like you're dying over there, man.
I am not feeling very well.
I know, but I'm.
I'm sorry. I'm working through it. I apologize.
But Deep Space Nine to me is everything that Star Trek should have been. It's everything that Next Generation should have tried to be, but didn't. And I think the main reason that was a guy named Michael Piller.
Okay.
He was not really, I mean, he wrote a couple of scripts for Next Generation, but he wasn't a producer. He became a producer for Deep Space Nine, and he was the one that led them in that new direction.
So he took them on down the dark path.
Right.
So you would congratulate him. I would blame him.
Well, Michael Piller was a great, did I ever show you that unaired pilot he did, that Day One?
Yes.
He did that.
That
he,
was good.
He also did the first 3 seasons, I think, of The Dead Zone on USA before his cancer started to make it so he couldn't do that anymore. And he's unfortunately no longer with us due to his cancer. Hmm. But he was one that he had the direction of, why does it have to be, you know, uplifting? Why can't we be real? Because I remember, do you remember what Section 31 was in Star Trek?
It was their version of the CIA, basically, wasn't it? Or
even more than the CIA.
The NSA, or, yeah.
No, yeah. And the thing with Section 31, that brought such negative attention. Everyone was like, oh my God, Roddenberry is rolling in his grave over the fact that, and you go, think about it, an empire this size is going to be able to do everything above the board and with transparency? No, you have to have something like Section 31 to make a government like this work.
See, and again, that's a huge change because of where Roddenberry was coming from in the 60s with everything that was going on socially in the U.S. He basically gave us an overly optimistic series.
I think almost sugarily.
Yeah.
You know what word I can't spit out.
I know what you're talking about. Almost to a sugary level, yes.
Yes.
But he wanted that over-optimistic thing because all you had to do to get depressed was turn on the news.
Right.
And, of course, when Next Gen came out, when it was running, we had the first Gulf War. We had a lot of other stuff. So that optimism, I think, played a part in staying there and working through all of that. By the time DS9 rolls around, we were kind of between wars and such, and again, society looked at technology, and it had turned to a dark side. So yeah, I understand that it's reflecting the times around it, just like today. I really think today, and especially earlier in this decade, I think we would, with a new Star Trek, get something a little bit more optimistic. But what we did get was Enterprise, and that was a hunk of shit, and we'll deal with that next week. But I think we would get a series that was a little bit more optimistic and whatnot. It's an inverse relationship to the news.
See, I disagree with that kind of, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I disagree with the philosophy of that's the direction to go.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're wrong and that's what they do, because you're not wrong. But to me, I want to see something that is reflecting the times, not is an anti-reflection of the times. I don't want to see something happy when everything else is shit. I want to see something that's reflecting what's really going on. And also, when you start doing that, you get the chance to do some of the really groundbreaking things. I'm saying groundbreaking for Star Trek that the show did, such as homosexuality. It was the only Star Trek to date that has dealt with homosexuality, both in pretty much just in lesbian relationships. But okay, you remember Dax being 700 years old and has lived multiple lifetimes in multiple different bodies, correct?
Right. Okay.
Well, she met up with a former host of hers that was also currently in a female body, and they started to have somewhat of an affair. That kind of thing had never been dealt with prior to this. And that was something very adult. And then, do you remember how we talked about DS9 was the only place that dealt with the Mirror Universe?
Right.
Mirror Kira kept trying to bed our Kira.
Neat. Which,
that's almost masturbatory, since they're technically the same person, isn't it?
Technically, almost. It's kind of like if somebody cloned you.
And you had sex with your own clone. Is that masturbation?
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, and then they even had, dealing with the Mirror Universe, a weird crossover with Voyager. Tuvok from Voyager was a freedom fighter in the Mirror Universe. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, because obviously Voyager would have never happened via the Mirror Universe, but you know what I mean.
Right.
But you get stories that deal with actual loss, like when Nog gets his leg shot off, and he's got to deal with not being able to, you know, his new cloned leg doesn't work the same, and he basically goes into a multi-episode long depression. You know, I don't think you would have dealt with the No. realistic effects of amputation on Next Generation.
No, you wouldn't have.
You know, you had drug addiction. You had characters that were addicted to substances on Deep Space Nine. You know, you had crime. You had, remember we talked about the Orion Syndicate?
Yes.
They played a large role on Deep Space Nine. Quark and Odo were constantly running into the Orion Syndicate assholes. O'Brien, even in a Donnie Brasco-ish episode, got one killed. He went undercover, and the guy... The guy vouched for him and whatnot, you know, not knowing he was Starfleet.
Right.
And then when they made the bust on the Orion Syndicate, the guy that vouched for him got killed because he vouched for the wrong guy. And things of that nature. You would never have dealt with those types of stories on Next Generation. And whether you love them or hate them, it is what it is.
Yeah. And I'm not saying DS9 is a bad series. It just wasn't for me.
Well, and I can agree with that, but you said you place it as the worst of the three good series.
No, I don't.
You place it above TOS?
I place it above Voyager.
I said of the three good series, which is Classic, Next Gen, DS9. Oh, okay. Classic, so of the Next three Gen. Good series.
Then yes, I place it above TOS.
Really?
Yes.
Just, okay.
Just, well, the original series, I have no love for the original series. And I get into a lot of trouble with my fellow nerds about this, but I can't stand William Shatner's acting.
But you've got DeForest Kelly and Leonard Nimoy's to balance
that
out.
Yeah, but I can't stand Shatner's acting. Can't stand it.
You mean his acting overall or just his acting on Classic Trek?
Because
his style is way different now.
Yeah, I mean, his style now, I like it. I liked him on Boston Legal.
I like T.J. Hooker, actually. He was wasn't too bad.
T.J. Hooker. But I liked him on Boston Legal. I can't stand his acting on TOS. I just can't. I guess maybe I'd go as far as to say that I don't really like the character of Kirk on that series.
Oh, no, I'll give you that. I've never been a Kirk fan. Just as a character, I've never been into Kirk. That's just outright.
Yeah, and you know, I just, it's not... Meh.
Okay. Well, and then the other thing about DS9 is it was the only one of the series that, to me, really always had an element of peril to it. like we spoke about last week, you always knew, you know, when Picard or Dr. Crusher or somebody got into a death-defying situation on Next Gen, that they'd be okay.
Yeah, with the exception of a few two-part episodes, you knew by the end of the hour everything was going to be good.
And pretty much reset back to zero.
Right.
On DS9, you didn't have that. Because they would regularly kill supporting and regular characters to the point where you kind of got to the point where, man, that guy's got a gun to Dr. Bashir's head. He might actually die in this episode, which really did give it a sense of gravity, I think. And you also had what we were all afraid was going to happen didn't. And that was Jake Sisko. We were afraid he was going to be another Wesley Crusher. How did you word it? The little wunderkind. Okay, yeah, and that's what it looked. That's what it looked like.
That's what I was afraid of.
That's what it looked like. Jake Sisko was going to be in the early episodes.
Yep.
And then they wisely not only matured the character, but they made him a damn good character as the show went on, to the point this is no black Wesley Crusher here.
Right. And he wasn't stupid by any, but. He didn't look at superior and, lifelong trained people and go, well, if you just look at the brain scans, you stupid doctors, look at this. Everybody can see this. You're dumb. And that's one thing that Wesley Crusher did all the time. Mm-hmm. Mom, I realize you've had medical training your entire life, and so have these two scientists that have been studying it for years. But look, it's blatant and in front of you. It's
obvious, right.
And everybody else is like, oh, you're right, Wesley, oh. And that was the problem with Wesley Crusher.
And see, with Jake Sisko, you got just the opposite. Yeah, he was an annoying little teenager in the first season or so.
Right.
But I think he was supposed to be.
Yes.
And then they made him a writer, and they made him a war correspondent once the Dominion War came about. And they had a really great character episode where it was during the Klingon War. He basically revealed to himself he's a coward. He was doing war correspondence, and the Klingons attacked, and he hid under a table and let another Federation citizen get killed because he was too scared to act. And so he had to deal with the fact that he basically has to man up and that he was a coward, and Dr. Bashir was covering up his cowardice when they were telling his father about it, which is something he really did make up for when they abandoned Deep Space Nine. When the Dominion took it, Jake stayed behind to be a war correspondent for the Federation. And, you know, it was kind of his making up for his cowardice earlier. That's real character growth. That's actual characters.
Yeah.
You know, because if you did that, if you, you know, had some, you got yourself into some situation and then, you know, an act of cowardice pulled you back, you'd want to make up for it, even if it's just to yourself, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And, you know, and then you've got Sisko, a captain unlike any other captain Star Trek had ever seen. This was the guy. This is why I said he's basically Hawk in space. If you've ever watched Spencer for Hire, you know what Hawk was like. And Sisko, if you remember the episode For the Cause, where Commander Addington, who was the Starfleet chief of security, who turned out to be for the Maquis, he basically stole a bunch of chemicals and dropped them on a Cardassian planet that the chemicals wouldn't affect humans at all. But it made the Cardassians have to move off the planet so the humans could take their planet from them. So Sisko said, all right, you going to play this game? I'm taking your colony and I'm dropping a vial of something on it that will kill humans. Get off the planet. I don't think you would have ever seen Picard do that. You would have never seen Kirk do that. It was, oh yeah, you're going to play dirty? Let's play dirty, motherfucker. And do you remember the two-parter past tense? You know, just nod your head or you can put your mic up.
No, I don't.
You need to see that one again. It was, at the time, science fiction. It's almost now science fact. It was a two-parter. Sisko, Bashir, and Dax, due to a transporter accident, which I think was a big MacGuffin, but a transporter accident sends them back to, I think, late 90s, early 2000s America. Because they were trying to go to San Francisco, so it just sent them back in time, not in space.
Okay.
And San Francisco at that time, due to the economic collapse, you got to remember, this, none of this had happened in real life yet. Basically, San Francisco was roped off and turned into a giant ghetto where if you didn't have a job, you were forced to live in and basically escape from New York because that was the only way you could keep these people off the street for the good folks. And it was a dark, dark two-parter about riots, human rights, and what you need to do to get an economy back going.
Now, was this one done during the LA riots?
I think shortly after.
Shortly after.
And you go, again, I could have never seen a different Trek tackling something like that.
Probably not, no.
You know, I mean, you've got Sisko and Bashir scrounging for food and fighting with mentally ill people that, ironically enough, think Dax is an alien. They're technically right, but they don't realize it. They're just actually crazy.
Right.
And, you know, you got them fighting, you got them wearing dirty, scroungy clothes and sleeping on pavement and that. And that's a real great episode, the past tense one. You know, and then you got all the Bajoran fighting politics stuff. You got those multi-episode story arcs where the Bajorans are trying to... do you remember Frank Langella's role on that? Or he's giving me a perplexed look. You don't remember Frank Langella being on DS9?
No.
Yeah, he was on a 3-episode arc where the Bajorans basically tried to pull away from the Federation.
Okay.
And it wasn't a smart move.
Okay.
You know, and you had characters like that fucking cunt Kai Winn, that fucking traitorous bitch that... Trust me, Louise Fletcher, brilliant actress. You might know her as Nurse Ratched from One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yes.
You knew as soon as she appeared on screen. Does she ever play a good guy?
I don't think so.
So you just knew something was wrong with Kai Winn. Or sorry, Vedic Winn when she first appeared. She wasn't the Kai yet. She was only a Vedic back then. You know, to me, I love Deep Space Nine. I really do. I cannot recommend it higher. If you're not even a Star Trek fan, don't let the fact that the word Star Trek is in front of that turn you off. I'm saying this to the listeners. Check out Deep Space Nine. Okay, the first season is kind of weak because they were still trying to be Star Trek. The second season, they're starting to fix things and starting to get darker and more serious, and things really pick up in the third season when they say, fuck it, we're doing our own thing.
And see, okay. You know, and I'm not going to fault that against you at all. I think by that time I was kind of burnt out.
On Trek or just on sci-fi TV or what? On
sci-fi in general, because, and I remember exactly what was going on. Back then you had Lex, which was a...
Lex wouldn't have appeared till the mid-90s. So I know.
But you got to remember when I'm watching this stuff.
Because
I had spent the majority of its first run in England.
Right.
And not being exposed to it and everything like that. Lex was a
British series, though. So did you see that in England, or did you see that?
No, I saw that in the U.S. afterwards.
Unfortunately, because the U.S. versions are severely edited compared to the British versions.
I thought so.
The DVDs, I believe, are uncut, but the versions we got on Sci-Fi were like 5 minutes shorter and missing all the nudity.
Yeah, which really would have been the only good part of that series.
Lex was not a great series, people.
But nonetheless, but my friend at the time that I was dating was a huge Lex fan.
Okay.
I don't know why. I think she liked the robot. And then we had Babylon 5.
Right.
Which I was catching in reruns and stuff like that. Not a bad series. Not a great series. But an okay series. And then we had Next Generation that I was still getting caught up on.
The reruns, because they would have been off the air at that point.
Exactly. And then we had DS9 and Voyager, all of them playing all at once, and that's when I was...
And you were probably watching Hercules and Xena at that time as well?
I was not, but she was.
Okay, well... It was there. It was mm-hmm. yet another show that was taking up time. Mm-hmm. And then there was probably Buffy. And
didn't get into Buffy, but I never got into Buffy or Angel, but Angel was her show of choice because she had a thing for David Boreanaz.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And the guy that played Spike, who I can't remember.
James Marsters?
Yeah, that sounds right. Marsters, something. Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway. But yeah, and I had all of this going on, and if it wasn't the WB, then it was sci-fi. And I think when I finally was able to get exposed to so much of Trek that I had missed, like DS9 and Voyager, I was just so burnt out.
So would you go, given if you had the time and I loaned you all the DVDs, would you watch DS9 again from the beginning and in order? Or do you just have no interest at all in even checking? I mean, I know you and I don't agree on a lot of things. Yeah, so I don't think my recommendation carries a whole lot of weight with you.
No.
But
usually it carries anti-weight, honestly.
But with all the weight I'm putting on it,
I'd give it
and me telling you that season one is weak and season two is weak,
I'd give it a shot.
Because maybe when you get back, he's got a little work.
We'll deal with that. I'm headed up, way up north in Wisconsin by the Apostle Islands.
Yeah. He's got a little, like, 8-day stint.
I get to rebuild a family dollar up there.
Woohoo! But, you know, maybe I'll loan them to you. And also, Star Trek, in general, has always had this weird thing where the pilot episodes tend to not be the best. You know, because there's so much exposition you got to get out, there's so many, you got to introduce all the characters and whatnot, the pilots tend to be the weakest episodes of
right, look at the Captain season. Pike episode.
Right. But DS9, really strong pilot. And also, the pilot showed right away Star Trek fans something that they'd been wanting for a long time. The Battle of Worf 359 from Next Generation.
Yeah.
Because remember, true. In Best of Both Worlds, you didn't see it. You
that's
heard
true.
Parts of it and then the Enterprise.
Off. Yeah.
Well, Sisko was there, which is why he hates Picard so much, because of Picard being Locutus.
Right.
Well, we see the battle. We see the Borg melting Starfleet ships and blowing it up and killing Sisko's wife and that. So that was something really, I mean, the first 5 minutes of DS9's pilot are showing Trek fans something they'd been asking for years, which was, we want to see like a flashback or something to Worf 359. So that was, to me, getting the show started again on a dark tone, because that's obviously dark. You're killing Federation citizens left and right, which is another thing with the Dominion War. The Dominion War? Okay, Beta Zed, you know, Deanna Troi's people.
Yes, yes.
Beta Zed falls to the Dominion. San Francisco and Starfleet headquarters get blown up. We lose over a third of all the ships in Starfleet get destroyed during the Dominion War. Over 5 billion Federation citizens and Starfleet personnel are killed.
Okay, so roughly 5/6 of the population of the Earth.
Yes. Well, you got to remember, but there's a lot.
But today, to put it
yes.
in.
And so what it comes down to is the Dominion War cost the Star Trek universe a huge toll, which is why that's the only thing that irritated me about the series finale of DS9 is it ended the Dominion War. And I think there were a lot more cool stories that could have come afterward to show how the Federation rebuilt. And how their alliances held up with the Romulans and the Klingons and, you know, the Cardassians. Basically, we had to go send them aid, even though we'd been fighting them the whole time.
Right.
And things of that nature.
Right.
To me, there were a lot more stories that could have been told in one more season of Deep Space Nine, in my opinion. But so that's the only thing that irritated me about the finale being the end of the war is... Oh, and also, I don't think we... No, not counting Generations wrecking the Enterprise. I was surprised when they blew up the Defiant on DS9. Did you realize that they actually did that? Since you were only sporadically into that,
no,
they actually blowed the ship up, and not in the finale either. Because Melissa and I, as they were counting down, Melissa's my wife. Melissa and I, as we were counting down to the finale. We expected, okay, they're probably going to blow the Defiant up in the final episode. I can see that coming. Not 4 episodes before the finale. That was a little, well, hey, you got me again. I didn't see that coming. Good on you. You got me. So we got 10 minutes left. What do you want to say about Star Trek in general before we get to the two bad ones? Or, you know, when I say Star Trek, I mean the three we've discussed up to this point.
I was hoping you meant those three and not...
Not the bad ones.
Random. I thought I'd just take a moment, you know, mention Star Trek, but now talk about Red Dwarf and how that is a thoroughly superior.
I disagree with that, but.
I liked Red Dwarf, but that's That's a whole nother
show. I tried it. Oh, my God. I know.
Yeah. I like the adventure. I like the light story. I like what we saw in Next Generation and kind of what we saw in the original series. Again, the original series had some solid writing behind it and some really crappy writing behind it, too.
It had both, yes.
But all in all, I mean, with Next Generation, stories were a little bit more mature, and I really enjoyed...
Or to me, the new Star Trek.
Right. And I really enjoyed the stuff that didn't take... It didn't take my brain away. And given with DS9, it takes a little brain power to follow, and okay, I will give it another shot as long as I can see it in order.
Oh, I want to correct you on something, too.
What's that?
I was listening to the episode that we did last week. That's my phone vibrating.
Okay.
I have it on vibrate. That's why it doesn't bother us. That's good. You called Murdoch from the A-Team Berkeley. It was Barkley.
Barkley.
Reginald Barkley. I wanted to say, as I listened to last week's episode, you called him Berkeley. I wanted to correct.
Barkley is close.
Well, because I know some Trek nerd is going to email us.
Absolutely no doubt. So Barkley it is.
Right.
My apologies.
But, so would you call yourself now a Star Trek fan overall? Or is it just something you enjoy to the point where you would not call yourself a fan?
I wouldn't call myself a fan.
If it's on TV,
it's good.
Classic Trek, would you watch it?
Yeah, on occasion. If it's a good episode of Classic Trek, if it's one that really catches my interest. And BBC America has been replaying The Next Generation.
We've talked about the geek. Okay, because the main character, the main actor is British.
I know. We've discussed that.
I know.
But, you know, and so I catch it there because not much else is on. It's not something I go out of my way. It's not something that I would go to a con about. It's not, you know, I'm not going to write fan fiction. I'm sure as hell not going to write Slash or anything like that.
I hope not.
Yeah, no kidding. But so I'm not a Trekker. I'm not a Trekkie. I'm not a fanboy. I wouldn't even really count myself a fan, but I do enjoy it.
Okay. Where, you know, until we get to next week's topic, which...
Until we get to the bad ones, which, you know, I can't be in the minority. I think nobody enjoyed those.
Well, see, Voyager, I mean, we'll get more into it next week, but I enjoyed the first couple of seasons when it was new.
Yes.
Because for one thing, I didn't realize how bad it was going to get.
Right.
I didn't realize that, you know, these episodes that are mediocre mm-hmm. are going to turn out to be the best of the series. Yes. I didn't realize that at the time. I kept going, okay, there's potential here. That was the thing with Voyager. There was always potential that was never tapped.
Agreed.
Whereas I think Deep Space Nine exceeded their potential. But to me, from what I've read, DS9 compared to Next Generation and Classic Trek is like the redheaded stepchild. Even when compared to Voyager and Enterprise. It's the one that is so unlike Star Trek that you either love it or you hate it. You don't find a whole lot of DS9 fans that are, oh, it was all right. It's either I absolutely love this show like me or I absolutely hate this show like you.
Yeah. And to tell you the truth, I think DS9 would have been better if it stood on its own and they took off the Star Trek moniker.
Oh, you're going to make me get into next week, aren't we?
Yes, I am.
Because that's what Enterprise tried to do.
I know.
Star Trek that wasn't Star Trek.
Exactly.
But we'll get into that more next week. But we got 5 minutes and 20 seconds. You talk.
No. Why? Because number one, my throat is
And you've only yawned like 40 times
I've in only this yawned 40 times and I've been coughing like crazy. And so, I apologize to the listeners. I'm not 100% this week. And I don't think I will be next week either because I'm still getting over this thing. But
then let's take this time to do what we were going to do next week. Let's tell them what's going on with you. Oh. Scott will be he'll be here next week to finish Star Trek.
Yes, I'll be finishing, and then I'm just going to take a couple of episodes off. Like,
hopefully he'll be still be here for Halloween. Let me point that out. Hopefully he'll come back for Halloween.
I will come back for Halloween. Then
the leave of absence will take
effect. And I'm just taking a couple episodes off. Josh is going to try and find another.
I'm going
to
try and co-host to sit
in, just to sit in for a little while. I just need a couple episodes to get some stuff in my life straightened out, and I will be back. So you'll notice we have no cake and bourbon. If we have cake and bourbon, then that means that I'm leaving the show.
Why? Am I missing a joke here?
No. It's just that when people leave...
Just you want cake and bourbon?
When people leave, you have cake and bourbon.
Ah. Okay.
And you take the cake, you dip it in the bourbon.
I don't drink. You know that.
Well, that's why you dip the cake in the bourbon.
I won't be drinking. I don't imbibe alcohol.
Imbibe?
Imbibe, yes.
Imbibe, I believe, is the word you're looking for.
I'm sticking with
speak English either, do you?
Hey, I was playing Metal Slug last night, and that's full of English.
Yes.
The whole game's full of English. So I was playing Metal Slug last night, and maybe the English fell into my head.
But nonetheless, I am taking a leave of absence, a very short one, but I will be back. No need to panic. Josh has asked me 387,000 times, "You're not leaving the show forever, are you? Because I really want to have you back. I want to have you back." I'll be back, Josh. I mean it. Really, are you coming back?
Well, I'm worried because I've seen too many other shows where the person says, you know, we're taking a leave of absence or, you know, whatnot. And then you'll notice 40 episodes later, they're not back. And you go, yeah, that
was a very, very long leave of absence, but
I've seen that on numerous shows, and okay.
I'll put it to you this way.
I'm paranoid. You know, I'll put it to you this way. Individual.
If you ask me one more time if I am coming back or not,
I get karate chopped in the throat.
No, the answer changes.
Okay, I won't. I was just about.
So the choice is now yours. All you have to do is ask, and I'll simply say no. I won't be back, and
fuck you.
We won't even finish Star Trek month. I'll just say fuck you and leave.
Well, so what I want the listeners to do is I want you to email Scott and tell him that he is an integral part of this show. Lie to him like that.
I was going to say, I'm going to get one email, probably from your wife, going, "I like listening to you better than Josh." So
no, you'll probably get one from Andrew from Serbia.
Possibly.
I'm sure Andrew, remember, smurray75@gmail.com.
Okay. And actually, I have gotten a couple other emails from a fan. And it's, like I say, I appreciate it. I like doing the show. I will be back. I just need to straighten some stuff out.
You know, without going into anything, he's got some stuff going on in his life and work. That's assuming he survives be here next week. Dude, I think your like 9-pack-a-day habit has got to stop.
Dude, actually, I'm actually really proud of myself. I'm down to about a pack a day. And that
for you is good?
For me is good, provided I was at one point, now given this is back at the end of high school, when I could afford cigarettes and stuff, I was at one point doing about 5 packs a day. So to cut that back to
one. Did you even
breathe
actual air or just breathe smoke and nicotine?
No, any time I wasn't in class, I would chain smoke. Light one with the one I just finished.
Jesus. Okay, he's wearing a black t-shirt right now. I'm starting to think that actually has lungs showing through his chest.
I wouldn't doubt it, but to cut from 5 packs to 1, I'm pretty proud of. Anyway, we're out of time, Josh.
All right, we'll be back for the end of Star Trek month.
Thanks a bunch for joining us for the last of the good Star Trek episodes.
Series of
episodes.
All right, I'll give you that, and then we both win.
There we are.
Click stop.